Hi guys, Alex here. I'm dropping in to share an episode of a new limited series from Crooked and Left Right TV. We are very excited about it. It's called Long Play, like LP, get it? For both major parties, the path to winning America runs through the South, but to win it, you have to understand it. And that's where Long Play comes in. Across six Southern states, Long Play examines the issues driving voters in a region that could shape the future of our politics and our country. It is supremely excellent work from Emmy-nominated host and Southerner, Jennifer Palmieri, who, of course, was a former communications director for Barack Obama, as well as the former mayor of New Orleans, Mitch Landrieu, and award-winning journalist, great lady, been on the podcast, Erin Haynes. I am thrilled to share it with you. We, as a Crooked family, are thrilled to share it with you. This is the kind of work I used to do on The Circus, if you ever watch that on Showtime. It is the inheritor to that throne, if you will, and it is so great. They're doing an excellent job. I learn something new every single time I watch. I loved the episode on Georgia. You should go check it out if you have not. You can listen to the North Carolina episode right here. And if you like it, watch or listen to the series right now by subscribing to Long Play Series on YouTube or Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll put the links in the show notes.
Bring this guitar up just a tad bit.
That's fine.
Hey, folks, welcome to the third stop on our road trip through the South.
Oh, my gosh, it's the most North Carolina tailgate ever.
That's right. We're in North Carolina, where Jen is kicking things off with another music venue.
We went to the Outer Banks to get these shrimp.
I actually think we resonate more with Appalachian culture than even Southern culture.
That's why you're at a Jason Isbell show.
Exactly.
So how do you think things are going in North Carolina?
It's a good old boy system.
Oh, I don't think either party speaks for me.
I'm a registered independent.
It's a lot of them in North Carolina.
Yes, we want the right thing for all people.
You see, North Carolina is one of the South's biggest political battlegrounds. Obama swung the state blue in 2008. Since then, Republicans have carried it in every presidential election, often by the slimmest of margins. But the story of the state isn't just about politics, it's also about culture. And who better to help us understand how those two things go together than singer-songwriter Jason Isbell? The issues he sings about are often the ones that cross party lines, where people can sometimes find common ground and sometimes find they both feel left out. This is Long Play, Winning the South, Episode 3, North Carolina.
Congratulations, everyone. You're meeting America's greatest songwriter right here.
Yeah. Tomorrow, or?
Do you think your music is Southern?
I think I am Southern. Musically, it's like DNA Southern. I couldn't get away from that if I tried.
When I look at your catalog, I don't see politics until Trump won,
there was an urgency.
You lost fans.
Some. I think I gained more than I lost.
I'm sure you gained.
I really think so.
Yeah.
To me, I'm trying to just remind people of what we have in common. Okay, what can we agree on? We're both angry about something. You know, what is that? Is it the fact that nobody else is seeing the same thing that we're seeing? Sometimes you feel like you're preaching to the choir, but sometimes the choir is not singing loud enough. If you like to do something rather than be something, you can do a lot of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that is the part of the political process that is lost when you start looking at it like this side versus that side. It's really more about participating than it is about winning or losing.
After the concert, Jen, Erin, and I met up at the Thirsty Beaver Saloon in Charlotte to talk about North Carolina and how it's changing and whether it's politics or keeping up. If you step back and you think about North Carolina, there's a lot of optimism, there's a lot of hope, there's a lot of pride, and there's a lot of forward-leaning energy
that's attracting people
on the ground that are attracting people here.
My introduction growing up to the state of North Carolina was through college basketball.
Here in North Carolina, we talked to Jason Isbell. His music is really powerful and it hits people, and that stuff matters. People's views change because of things like music and sports and food and community bars like the Thirsty Beaver.
You were at that concert. There were all kinds of folks that were in that crowd, right?
Yeah, it was a mix. There were some Republicans there. There were people who voted for Democrats. There were independents there.
Well, look, I mean, you got a lot of independents here.
Yeah.
The quality of life, the jobs that they've been able to lure people here with, like all of that is definitely a thing that they care about.
100%. They're coming from all over the place. They're coming from the West. They're coming from the Northeast. And they're open to being for Democrats or Republicans.
I talked to Republican political consultant Paul Shoemaker, who's won more Senate races in North Carolina than, you know, any human. And Morgan Jackson, who's a longtime Democratic strategist here. And they call them unaffiliated voters.
Unaffiliated. You can't even
otherwise known as independent.
Otherwise known
in the middle. Like, unaffiliated. Like, we don't know you.
Jen went to Raleigh to meet with Paul and Morgan to hear more about those voters who don't see themselves in either party.
Most unaffiliated just get sick of the polarization, and they don't affiliate. I mean, that's the whole thing. They don't want to be part of...
I don't want to be affiliated with
either of them.
This is a state that is dramatically shifting as far as the political dynamics. When I got into the business, Democrats outnumbered Republicans 3.5 to 1.
And when was that? Like,
that was 1984. Now we're looking at 30% Democrat, 30% Republicans, and 39.5% unaffiliated voters. On top of that, you've got voters moving into this state. Almost 2 out of 3 voters weren't born and raised here.
Paul and I talk all the time about North Carolina maybe the swingiest state in the nation. There are very few swing areas in North Carolina. They are deep red and they are deep blue. Those two sides are evenly matched. We work in a state that you win and lose on the margins. The first governor's race I won was Roy Cooper's in 2016. We won by 10,000 votes.
Out of how many?
Out of 5 million, just almost 5 million.
Okay.
Think of how minute that is.
Republicans used to win by building coalitions with conservative Democrats. There are no longer any conservative Democrats to build coalitions with. Both sides have to build the coalitions with the unaffiliated in the middle in order to win the state statewide. It's a completely different dynamic.
You guys keep saying unaffiliated voters. We mean independents, right? These are political independents.
Yeah, and what we've seen...
Like, or who do you think they are?
It depends on where you live.
But here's what you need to know about unaffiliateds. They can turn on you in a dime. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to them making their decision who they vote for, they have a self-serving vote on how it impacts them. They voted for Trump because they thought he was going to fix the economy. They thought he was going to bring change. The fact they don't see that, they feel like they're getting even with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how they see it.
I'm going to throw the bums out election. Even if it's the bums I just voted for 2 years ago, I want a new set of bums because this ain't working for me and this ain't working for my family.
Back at the bar, Aaron, Jen, and I talked about the new political dynamic.
I think my takeaway is North Carolinians have teams, but it's not necessarily party. Unaffiliated is,
true that. That's
is
right.
The team that a lot of people are on, and they are focused on who is going to do something for them, and they don't care what party that person comes from.
They're saying, I want something new and different, and I'm open to whatever.
What does the American dream look like for me? For too many people, that's feeling really out of reach. So, like, to your point, the person that's able to speak to that, that really seems to be the thing that people want to hear right now.
Well, also after the storm.
Hurricane Helene.
That's
Hurricane
right.
Helene is very present on people's minds.
Hurricane Helene is turning out to be one of the deadliest hurricanes to ever make landfall in the U.S.
And they're still recovering.
They're still not where they need to be. They're not back in their houses. People are not getting what they need.
People talk about Helene the way they talk about Katrina.
That is something that's really hitting home here. You spoke to Jamie Aker?
Yeah. Jamie Aker is a Democrat from the Asheville area who is running for Congress against Trump-endorsed incumbent Republican Congressman Chuck Edwards, and it had not been a competitive race. But now Edwards is under an ethics investigation for harassing female staffers.
Wow.
And Aker's a really good candidate.
And he's a farmer, is that right?
Jamie Aker runs the Hickory Nut Gap Farm just outside of Asheville. That's where Jen went to see him, to learn more about the area, Hurricane Helene, and how he's reaching voters.
This is gorgeous.
And here's some pigs.
Oh my God.
So, I'm fourth generation here. My family's been here since 1916, so we've been on this land for a long time.
we can just park here.
Tell me about Hurricane Helene here.
September 27th, 2024. That storm flooded us beyond what you could ever imagine. Stuff was just getting washed away, and it was like everybody's life got turned upside down. There's a beauty in the resilience factor, but also recognizing that, like, how do we create long-term durability from our economy of this region? And we're still wrestling with that. And I said, you know, I can complain or I can do something about it. And so I've been running for Congress for a year now. My granddad was in the U.S. Congress back in the 80s. And he had a button that I've still got, and it says Mountain Democrat. And that was inspiring to me.
What is a Mountain Democrat?
To me, Western North Carolina, we admire hard work. We admire people that work with their hands. We want to love our neighbors. I always remind folks that Democrats are the party of working people. To represent Western North Carolina means you represent the mountains right here. And the mountains are unique and different, and the issues we deal with are unique and different.
This state has a huge number of independents. How do you think about appealing to independent voters here?
I think that what you just said is interesting, right? Like that so many people are willing to vote for a candidate versus just a party. And people at this point
that
are
is
so
what everybody said to me.
Sick and tired of parties and all the party partisanship and all that. And I am sympathetic to that.
People's frustration over Hurricane Helene recovery. Was there a sense of just like, nobody has my back?
Yeah, nobody has my back. When is this application going to get reviewed? I sent it in 3 months ago. I don't know what's going on. You know, businesses that had to make payroll for a month without any revenue.
Yeah, like you did.
Was the leader of Western North Carolina, Chuck Edwards, adequate in responding to that storm? Could we have done better? Absolutely. He wasn't out and about enough, wasn't doing stuff. I just think that's sad. When our leaders aren't living up to the expectations of what true leadership is, right? Which is inspiring people to be better versions of themselves. And so that's what we want to do with this campaign.
When you ask people why North Carolina hasn't flipped blue, one answer comes up again and again. Democrats just can't find a way to connect with rural voters. Jamie Ager could be the kind of Democrat who can change that because he calls himself a mountain Democrat. But going up against an incumbent, as you know, is never easy. In a district like this, just about everything has to go your way, including Republicans deciding they might have bigger battles to fight elsewhere.
You could ride through the country now, and before every third house was Trump, 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 and you go through there now and there's nothing.
It's seen as a more, as a redder state than it really is.
I find myself to be more of a centrist, but out of an abundance of caution, I usually vote blue.
If you vote for a Republican, they get kowtowed into supporting Trump stuff.
25% of the state did a hardcore Trump guys.
I'm a cradle to grave Republican. I attended 65 Trump rallies. Love the guy.
The fight for political power in North Carolina isn't just happening at the ballot box. It's also happening behind the scenes over who gets to write the rules and run the elections.
Republicans have done a very studious job of finding ways to hold on to power in this state.
Yeah, Republicans have controlled state legislatures here for the better part of, what, 15 years?
There's been an effort by Republicans in this state to sort of coalesce their power. Can you walk us through what those elements are?
I think the biggest feature would be the partisan and racial gerrymandering that we've seen over the last 15 years.
That's Democratic State Representative Vernetta Alston.
Gerrymandering is happening both with the redoing of maps in the state legislature.
Yes.
As well as redoing maps for Congress.
It's both, yes.
There is the gerrymandering, and then there is turning over the running of elections away from the governor to the state auditor, which is like their job is to audit businesses. Their job is to check on your taxes. And now all of a sudden also deciding where polling places are.
Correct. Like in most states, it's the Secretary of State.
This is like the only state in the country where that's even a thing.
The auditor now has the power that no other entity in the entire state of North Carolina at any point in time in its history has had.
That's Democrat Robert Reeves, State House Minority Leader. He's been calling out these efforts to suppress access to voting.
So you've talked about Republican efforts to limit early voting on Sundays.
Yes.
Voting on and near college campuses.
Yes. It was incredibly disturbing for me to hear that, you know, the county I was born in just cut Sunday voting without a full discussion, without a lot of advertisement. It's death by a thousand cuts.
Seems very methodical, too.
Well, it is. It's brilliant. It's brilliant in the way that the emperor was brilliant in Star Wars.
Representative Alston is also sounding the alarm.
Republicans are so focused on holding power that they have, like, so clearly neglected the basic needs of everyone in North Carolina.
People are paying attention and they are pissed. Sidney Batch, the state Senate minority leader, did an anger translator video.
Instead of doing their jobs, Republicans are acting like a bunch of little because they can't deliver a budget.
Jen sat down with Senate Minority Leader Batch to talk more about how she's pushing back.
My mom called me, and I was on the news recently for one of the videos that I did for the
Obama saw the video, Senator.
Thank you. My mom's like, what did you do? You're on the news. And I said, I used the four-letter words that you taught me as a child. You're welcome. That's fine.
Okay, but like, all right, well, then let's start there. So, like, would you describe yourself as a moderate politically?
Yeah.
Okay. But you seem pissed off.
Yeah, I think, like, almost everyone.
What are you pissed off about?
I think that it's just the dysfunction within our government as a whole.
When you say government, do you mean North Carolina?
The North Carolina state legislatures. Government should work.
Yeah.
And it's very dysfunctional. And I think that Republicans are breaking it by design. They're creating the dysfunction.
I think what's happened in North Carolina has kind of been under the radar. Barack Obama won it once in 2008. I think people thought that it was on a trajectory of being purple, if not blue.
Right.
Can you walk us through why that hasn't happened?
Yeah. So I think part of that is, yes, voters get to vote. But when you gerrymander maps the way that they have been in North Carolina, really, what is the power of your vote? If you look at statewide races, it's pretty much 50-50. When everyone in North Carolina has an equal vote and equal say, we have a lot of Democrats, like governor, lieutenant governor. But when you get down to legislative races in the House and then also in the Senate, they've gerrymandered it so much that there are only in the Senate right now six competitive Senate seats out of 50. Mm. In a purple state, you should have more than six seats. I started running in 2018. I have served in a different district for the last four terms.
I thought it was only supposed to happen every 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's resulted in this state legislature being the most powerful in the country?
Right. So what's happened over the last 15 years when Republicans have been in charge is that they've been literally, like, peeling away all the powers of the governor. They removed the Board of Elections from the governor, and what they did to our attorney general, who's a Democrat, they said, you know what? You can't file any lawsuit unless you come to the legislature first and we give you permission. It has just been a constant attack to continue to claw all the power that they can have to consolidate it in the state legislature. Many people think that the federal government is absolutely so important and it gets a lot of the attention. But state legislatures is where all of what happens to your day-to-day life really is affected.
You're trying to break the supermajority in the Senate.
Yeah, we're not only trying to break the supermajority, we're trying to take the majority.
So what will all of this mean for the election this fall? I met back up with Aaron and Jen to talk it out. People want government to get shit done. Legislators are supposed to pass the laws. And if they take all the power, they control everything and nothing's getting done, people are going to get really upset and blame them.
We've got a Senate race. Roy Cooper, former governor, lifelong North Carolina politician, is facing off against Michael Whatley. Roy Cooper, he's hammering the main issue that not just Democrats, but Americans care about, which is affordability, literally running on the slogan, make stuff cost less.
The other thing, too, is that I talked to Pat McCrory yesterday, who was a mayor of Charlotte for 14 years. He was a governor. One term, Roy Cooper was his attorney general and beat him. The issue in that campaign was about transgender rights. It was the bathroom bill, HB2.
The whole world came down on North Carolina like a ton of bricks. They lost concerts. They lost sporting events.
Yes. And so today you jump forward and Roy Cooper's running for the Senate and all he's talking about is cost. He's not talking about culture issues and it's winning.
Maybe the potency of the cultural issues might just be dissipating in some ways.
I asked Governor Pat McCrory about that during my conversation with him in Charlotte.
You were the mayor of this great city and where we are.
And then I ran for governor and won. And then I ran for governor again and lost.
You've been quoted as saying that you don't think that you would pass the litmus test now of the Republican Party.
Well, I stepped on the toes of both parties. I introduced mass transit to Charlotte.
Conservatives don't like that.
When I was governor, I had the far left attack me because I was one of the first battles on the transgender issue, which was really not my issue. I hated the social issues because I was an operations guy. I was looking for waste. I was looking for efficiency. I'm a mayor. We're not seeing that in politics now.
Mind if I pull on a scab a little bit? I don't mean to.
No.
I think it's House Bill 2, so the transgender issue, right?
It came months before my election, out of the blue.
Arguably, that's the reason why Roy Cooper, who was your attorney general at the time, was able to beat you. Was it the issue in the campaign, or was it just one of many issues?
One of many. Actually, the issue that beat me was a toll lane in North Charlotte, where I lost 30,000 Republican votes. You can get hit by
a lot of things.
A lot of things. So HB2 was the public issue.
Right. You've kind of warned the conservative Republicans, man, lay off the cultural stuff. You got to stay on cost. Are you seeing that here?
I'm seeing that, except not on the transgender issue.
Yeah.
Because the public opinion has flipped. The Democrats are now staying away from that issue.
Roy Cooper right now is running for the United States Senate. Now, y'all haven't elected a Democratic senator in 18 years.
It's Kay Hagan.
Yeah. You think that he's going to be able to pull that off?
I think Roy Cooper has, first of all, the money. And second, he's actually very liberal. But Cooper beat me by less than 1% of the vote. He skimmed a little bit of my vote away by acting as conservative as he could. And that's one of his great strengths, is he says little, does even less, and stays on message.
Aaron took that assessment straight to Roy Cooper to get his reaction.
I saw somebody calling your Senate campaign blissfully boring. Do you think that boring is a political advantage in this race right now?
I am who I am. You're going to get who I am. And if I'm boring, then that's that.
They met after one of the campaign rallies in Gastonia.
My mom, public school teacher for years and years, and as governor, people would come up to me and say, I want to pay you a compliment. I think it's about me. And they say, your mama was the best teacher I ever had.
You've had a pretty good track record, right? I mean, 4 decades of being in North Carolina politics, you never lost a race. Democratic governors in North Carolina have had a pretty good track record, but we haven't had a Democratic senator in North Carolina in 2 decades.
I think there's more distrust of Washington and the national political parties, and maybe enough percentage of voters are unsure about that they don't want to send a Democrat to Washington. But our country needs a course correction. People are mad because government doesn't work. What they want is somebody to help them make sure their kid gets a good education. They want a good paying job. They want a safe community. These are very basic things that people want.
Here in North Carolina, it seems like there's still such a focus on some of these culture wars. I mean, I remember as Attorney General, you opposed the bathroom bill. After that, you become governor. You're vetoing that. And yet we're still seeing lawmakers in North Carolina that are focused on things like DEI and anti-trans legislation. What do you make of that?
Well, first, they're trying to distract from what people are really worried about, which is the cost of living. But I don't think enough North Carolinians are going to be distracted this time by that. This will be the toughest race that I've ever been. And I ran against a Republican incumbent for governor. This is going to be fireworks if you're looking for a close race. So we got to win it.
Cost issues versus culture issues. What will determine this race? Aaron, Jen, and I discussed this point back at the bar. I've talked to a lot of conservative folks that said, Cooper's doing pretty well. This seems fairly straightforward to me. People care about cost.
Yes.
Everybody is saying, I can't breathe. I need relief. And they want elected officials focused on making their life easier, not the culture stuff.
Yeah, focused on them.
And this is why your average voter is getting pissed off.
There's kind of a new future trying to be born. People are trying to figure out different ways. Don't think about Democrat, Republican. Think about a new thing.
Not beholden to a party.
Correct.
Where you got so many unaffiliated voters hanging out there, you can't take one person for granted.
When I look at North Carolina, I see a state trying to struggle and find itself. Not red, not purple, not blue, maybe something in between. It's changing dramatically. But the story of the state isn't just about politics. It's also about culture. Culture versus cost. That's the battle on the ground. Next up, Tennessee.
If we can make it up the mountain again, we'll be back with country friends.
From Left, Right, and Crooked Media, watch Long Play on YouTube at youtube.com/@longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, my name is Mitch Landrieu.
My name is Erin Haynes.
My name is Jennifer Palmieri, and we're hosting a new series called Long Play. The South is the new political epicenter of the country. Democrats are way on their heels in this region, but Republicans are going through their own reckoning in the South, too.
I mean, the South has always shaped American politics. We know that.
The stakes could not be higher, but to win the South, you have to understand it.
People in the South feel really misunderstood, left behind, put down on, and they want to explain that to somebody.
We're traveling across 6 southern states to explore the people, the issues, the assumptions that no longer hold, and what the rest of us are missing about a region that will shape the future of our politics and our country. From Left, Right, and Crooked Media, starting July 27th. Watch Long Play Series on YouTube at youtube.com/longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcasts.